He tells stories so grand of this vast, timeless land, and they call it Sunday with Macca.
Hi, Macca. This is George Morgan calling in from Gippsaro, the Australian aircraft manufacturer just east of Melbourne in Gippsland. I think you may recall we flew you around in our Australian-designed aircraft after the bushfires down here some years back.
I remember that, George, very well. In the air van, you make them here, or you did make them here. Do you make them here? Didn't they go to India or something?
Yeah, that's the purpose of the call. We managed to buy the company back. The originators bought the company back about 18 months ago. During this week, we had a ceremony to mark the laying of the first part of a brand new down-the-line air van manufactured here in Australia. Sort of the theme is on Australian manufacturing, which we feel is too much gone out of the country.
Listen, George, how did you buy it back from the Indians? They're pretty good. Business people, aren't they?
It's quite interesting, actually. It was a very large multinational corporation based out of India. It was originally a family-grown business, starting with building Jeeps for the war effort in World War II, and eventually it became a public company, and public companies take investors in. Investors are just centred on money primarily. I've seen this trend pretty much around the world in all sorts of businesses where they've grown to a point where they become more focused on money than best possible product, what do our customers really need, etc. And so the family members was forced to retire out of it, so it kind of lost its heart and soul a bit. So anyway, we reached an agreement that we could buy it back and put the company back together as it used to be.
You ain't got a cracker. They tell stories so grand of this vast, timeless land, and they call it Sunday with Macca. They all call it Sunday with Macca. Yeah, they all call it Sunday with Macca. Get on with it, Macca.
I will. Good morning and welcome. That was George last week, George Morgan. He builds a plane in Gippsland. And it's like, I don't know if you've ever seen a Cessna Caravan. Dick Smith used to fly a Cessna Caravan. It's got a big prop jet, one engine. Does about 200 knots, I suppose. Lovely plane. Probably seats about 10 or 12 people or carry lots of gear. And George, they lost it to India and then they bought it back because, as he said there, and this is something that happens everywhere, that people get more concerned about making money than actually doing the product that they're supposed to be worrying about, and then it all hits the fan and it all collapses. So they bought it back from India, and now they're making this plane again in Gippsland. I've got a pile of people in the studio with me. I'm very excited, ladies and gentlemen, to be here. Last week on the program, you might remember Bridget rang, and she said, "Oh, g'day, Ian. I just want to tell you my son is off with a whole pile of his friends." They're called Engineers Without Borders. Borders or Barriers? I'm not Borders. Engineers Without Borders. And I thought, that sounds interesting. And she said, they're going to here and there, and they're going to Tamworth. And as soon as I think of Tamworth, I think of my friend Raymond McLaren, who I met many years ago. And he's an engineer of sorts, but didn't start off doing a degree in engineering. He started off at tech. Twirling bits of wire together, making, you know, he wanted to get a trade. He was a young bloke. He wanted to get a trade. But that blossomed into now he does these cables and stuff all over the world, carrying big cranes and big weights and all sorts of stuff. So, you know, when you start twiddling with wires, who knows where that will end up. Bridget rang and I was really interested. So I said, look, you should go and see Raymond when you're up there. Raymond McLaren, he's got an engineering place outside of Tamworth. But he's also got this little house and it's called The Art of the Engineer. And we'll hear all about it this morning because I was most interested in, and when I saw it, and I'm not an engineer at all, but I can recognise when people are doing great work and... But we'll find out about it because in the studio this morning I've got Bridget. Good morning, Bridget. Bridget Wright.
Good morning, Macca.
Thanks for that call this morning.
Pleasure. It's great to be here.
Yeah, it's good. It's nice to see. And sitting next to her is Toby. Morning, Toby.
Morning, Macca.
And with Toby is 2, 4, 6, 7 of your confrères from UTS. That's where you're from, University of Technology. Is that right?
That's right, yeah. So we're with Engineers Without Borders Australia, and we're in the UTS chapter. So we represent our university within the organisation.
So where's the title Engineers Without Borders come from? What does it mean?
Engineers Without Borders is a not-for-profit, non-government organisation that delivers humanitarian engineering solutions to countries overseas.
Yeah.
Within Australia, and what we do specifically is we go out to schools and we do these things called youth outreaches.
Yeah.
Where we teach kids about engineering. We have little workshops that we do and hopefully encourage some of them to go on to study engineering when they go to university.
I just went to a thing yesterday at, not yesterday, the day before, in Gosford, where there was school kids who studied the Science and Technology Challenge, it is. So maybe some of you have done that. Did you do that at school? What's your name, sorry?
My name's Leah.
Leah, have you done that sort of thing? These were kids in year 9, 10, I think.
I've done something really similar.
Yeah, where you have one of the projects they were doing. And because you know that renewables has blown everything up in terms of the way people get their electricity now. So now they're building lots of towers everywhere and new cabling everywhere, and that's expensive. And you've got to work out the sort of cable you use, whether you can carry what sort of load, what sort of electrical loads, and then you think, oh, well, we put that in, but now we've got to carry more load, so they've got to figure out all that sort of stuff and what sort of cabling to use and how to save money and all that. So they were doing that. It was quite amazing, and everyone was talking about STEM and mathematics and all that sort of stuff. But look, on the line, I hope I've got Raymond McLaren. Good morning, Raymond.
Good morning, Ian.
How are you? I've got some of your friends here this morning from UTS, your engineering wannabes, well, I call them that, and they're here, and you had them up at your place the other day.
I met those people up here on Thursday, Ian, and there were 20 of them. And I must say, what a great bunch of young people. I was really, really pleased to see such a bunch of young and enthusiastic people.
Well, that's great. Yeah, go on.
You there? Yeah. Yeah, so they're such enthusiastic young people, Ian.
Yeah, well, they look all right. I've only known them for 5 minutes. They've just rocked in here, Raymond. Raymond, tell me about the art of the engineer. Why did you do that? Why did you build that little? Because you're busy doing all sorts of stuff, and you thought, well, this is a little place where people can come and see it. And I get lots of people who are taking school children or uni students around to see things. And that's the best part of life, I think, when you go to somewhere and you meet somebody or they've done something and you go and look and you think, oh, it opens a whole. And for me, when I walked into your Art of the Engineer, I thought, my God, look at this. There's a cross-section of a Winchester rifle and all sorts of strange stuff. And then the pump and all that. Why did you do this, Raymond?
Yeah, you've got a pretty good memory, Ian, when you've been to that a few years ago now. Yeah, well, the Art of the Engineer is basically a display of mechanisms. It's about mechanism. And I've used mechanisms all my life for various things. I've been in my design work. And I've always admired the inside of some of these pumps, the hydraulic pumps out of aircraft and stuff. They're literally works of art. And so I wanted to make those visible, and you can't normally see them until somebody cuts them open, and like me. And it's quite a job. You might think cutting up a pump is simple, but it's not so simple. When you're cutting up a very precious article, one fourth move and you can ruin it. So it takes quite some time. It's been a 30-year project to put these mechanisms together. And when groups like these young people come through, it's a real blast to see them so interested in the artwork inside these mechanisms.
Well, that's what impressed me about it. When I saw it, I thought, this is so... It's like... I was speechless. I saw this... And how did you cut that with lasers? How did you? You don't use a hacksaw, that's what I'd use, but how did you do all that?
Well, first of all, you have to take the mechanism apart and learn it, work out exactly how it all works. And then after that, you've got to work out exactly where to cut. And the cutting is usually done in milling machines, because milling machines are a very, very precise tool, and you can design your cuts very precisely, and so they cut in exactly the right place. And it takes quite some time to do this. But the result is great. I put them inside of a nice cedar wooden box. The cedar wooden box has really set them off.
Well, I think it's fabulous. I'll just read to everybody who's listening this morning. Good morning and welcome. This is Macca. We've got some engineers here, and Raymond McLaren on the line from up Tamworth Way. And Raymond sent me a text after you had all left. He said, "Hi, Ian, the group for Engineers Without Borders visited today, 20 people from the UTS. What a buzz. They were the most interesting and enthusiastic group I've ever entertained and rekindles my belief in young people. Thank you so much for telling them about my studio. It was almost as if," says Raymond, "I had prepared this especially with them in mind," which I thought was just a wonderful thing to say. Now, sorry, what's your name? You tell me.
Taya.
Taya, you'll have to, there you go, I've got you on. Taya, tell me your story, Taya.
Tell me my story?
Yeah.
Well, obviously I'm with Engineers Without Borders. I've been in this society for 3 years, and honestly meeting Raymond has just, it was such an incredible opportunity. It explored my horizons. It made me realise there is a light at the end of the tunnel of this degree, which obviously does get very difficult sometimes. And just the work we did up in Tamworth and seeing how much Raymond has developed over there, it was just incredible to see, and I think all of my peers could agree with me with that one.
Mm. So what are you going to do? What do you want to do?
I'm going into civil engineering. Mm. So obviously seeing all of his beams and a lot of those four-point bearings and four points was very interesting to see, because I do work with those a lot, especially in my cadetship at the moment. So it was just really nice seeing all of that theory finally being put into a practical situation.
And in lots of, as Raymond said, in lots of ways it's engineering, but it's, they're works of art. When I saw the what he's done with them is a work of art, but when you look inside a pump, for God's sake, pumps are amazing things. I just think pumps are amazing things. Raymond, what are you doing? What are you up to at the moment, Raymond?
At the moment, I'm cutting up a large block of steel here. We've got to make some parts for a big Caterpillar loader we're converting, and we can't buy the parts in, so we've got to cut up a large block of steel, get the slabs of 4140 alloy out of it, and so that takes a couple of days in a precision bandsaw. So a tedious little job, but quite rewarding at the end,
I'll say. And now, look, some of the students here. Just if you want to talk, just poke your head in front of. Come on, I'll have to talk into that. No, you stay there. But
Hi, I'm Reese.
Reese, tell me your story, Reese.
Yeah, so I'm a third year software engineering student. Just like Taya, I've been a part of a society for 3 years. Yeah, it's a very modern version of engineering.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's all in the computers.
Yeah. So you won't be sawing up blocks of steel?
No, I don't think I'll saw another block of steel in my life, potentially.
But somebody's got to do that, haven't they? I mean, that's the other thing that when I see a pump that's made like... you see the workings of a pump, you think, what a wonderful... It's a work of art, you know. It's an engineering masterpiece, but they're works of art, aren't they?
They really are.
Yeah. So what do you hope to do with your software?
Well, software, it's really more of a focus on what your computers are doing, how they work, right? So it's really getting, like, anything like your phone's working, all the stuff that makes that phone allow you to text, allow you to make those texts reach your other people, that's all my job.
You should have been here this morning. We had some issues. We had some issues. But anyway, good on you. Nice to. Thanks for coming in. What about this? Are you filming, or are you a student, or?
Sorry, I can give it a go. I've just lost my voice.
Oh, you've lost. Oh, well, I'm sorry. What's your name?
My name's Olivia. I'm the current president of our UTS chapter for Engineers Without Borders Australia.
Uh-huh.
I'm a third year mechatronics engineering student at UTS.
Uh-huh.
Essentially, coming into Engineers Without Borders, I thought it was a really cool opportunity to give back to the community that I never really got when I was growing up. So looking at STEM subjects, like, we didn't have really developed ones at my school, but coming into UTS and seeing that, I was able to go back into communities and show kids, especially girls, that engineering is a viable career option. I thought that was really cool. And just being able to go out into regional communities and show those students as well, especially those in primary schools earlier on, that engineering also is a career option. That was really cool.
Toby, tell me what you did up at Tamworth and around the place. You went out to schools and talked to kids in classrooms and things like that, did you?
We did. So we'd go to a bunch of primary schools and we'd deliver these workshops. So we'd show these students different problems that occur in the world, and we'd explain the significance of these problems, and then we'd go through how we can solve these problems with them. And so it was done in a way where they could create solutions with quite basic materials. For instance, so we looked at a lake in Cambodia that rises during the wet season and housing solutions there. And essentially what that entailed was building a boat that could float and hold a house on it where people could live. And so they would get pieces of cardboard, for instance, and tape and try and make a floating platform. And we test them with marbles, and essentially that was our way of seeing if they could build something that could float on which people could live.
Sounds like the challenge that I saw up at Gosford the other day, where they're doing the same sort of things, trying to build... And they were trying to build a thing out of matchsticks that would that could stand up in a wind tunnel and could land a helicopter on top of it and all that. This is, yeah, and I thought, I'm glad I'm not at school anymore. Yeah. They're quite difficult. So how did the children react, basically?
I think they loved it. I think they engaged really well. I think delivering some theory and information behind what's going on engages them, and then when you have an activity alongside it, that really gets them engaged because they like to do something that's hands-on. So yeah.
Well, that's great. I think it's a wonderful thing, and Bridget, I think it's wonderful that you rang up the other morning, because that's how from little things big things grow, and you just get that connection with people all over the place. And I think I remember when I was school, we did nothing at school. We didn't go on any excursions. This is in high school. Didn't go on excursions. But I think the best excursions I went on were at sport, when we had a cricket team and we travelled to Queensland. And the best time... And when you travel out, and those kids would love to see you and you'd love to see them, it's because it's different. I mean, to get out of the classroom is a wonderful thing, and, you know, like going to see Raymond... your name again was?
Taya.
It's a life-changing experience, isn't it, to meet someone like Raymond, who's been around for a while and doing all sorts of stuff, and you think, gee, I wish I could do that. So, Raymond, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here, Ian, yes.
Did you explain to people the sort of things that you've done with the conveyor belts and all those sort of things that were laying around your place?
Yeah, well, one of the things I noticed, some of the young people noticed these conveyor belts, one of the big tractors drawing belts around, and they had the curiosity to ask what's happening here. And what happens here is that we get the used conveyor belts from the coal mines in big reels, and then we roll it out, and then we split it into thinner sheets, or we cut it into strips, or we punch holes in it and make all these most useful materials, like the holy belt, and the fencing rails, and we make blasting mats out of the strips of it, and the belt going over the sand dunes with the hole in it, we make a lot of that. And so we take the old belt that's now useless, and then we convert it into something useful again. So it's not recycled. It's a reused material, and it's a very, very good service.
And that's what, to me, that's what engineering's all about. I met a bloke, there was a sailing competition, an international sailing competition on the harbour here some years ago, and I met this bloke, and he was in finance, and he was, you know, because you have to be in finance to afford to have an 18-footer. But anyway, I asked him how things were in England. He says, oh, you're so-and-so and so-and-so in finance, and he said, we're looking for engineers. And I thought, well, what the hell are you looking for engineers for? But I realised that engineers like Raymond, you look at something and you see the possibilities. And I suppose that's what you're training when you're training. But some people are born with that. So what's your name? Poke your head in somewhere.
My name's Angus.
Hi, Angus. What's your story?
I'm a second-year civil engineering student. Mm-hmm. So I'm here with EWB mainly because I'm also from a regional area, from Batemans Bay down south. Mm-hmm. So I grew up in a regional place. So I saw the opportunity to give back to those regional areas through EWB. Mm-hmm. So that's, yeah, the main reason why I'm here with them.
And you're good at maths, obviously.
Yeah, I try to be.
Oh, no, you don't. My theory is that you're either good at maths or you're not. I mean, you can. Mm-hmm. We can all do maths, but there's levels of third order differential equations and things like that that some people can do, and others say, "No, I'm going to go swimming." And what do you want to do?
I want to do civil engineering, mainly in the construction region, so project management, things like that. So having the opportunity to see what Raymond does, see the more practical side of it, was very cool.
Raymond, do you employ many people in your job, and what sort of people are they?
Well, in my company now, I don't own the company anymore, but I'm still a technical advisor here. But yeah, we've got about 14 people on staff. We've got two or three engineering-type people who do machining work. and we've got the operators who operate the machines that do the holy belt and split the belt and cut the strips and wind it up and measure it and so on. And then we've got the cable making division that make the big slings. Mm. They have manufactured the cable in a plaiting machine first and then cut it up and make it into slings. So we have about 14 people altogether.
Yeah, I wonder what are the... I assume that in engineering, the opportunities for employment are very good, are they?
Oh, yeah. Any capable engineer will have a job at no time. But one of the things I'd like to just explain to you, Ian, about mathematics and engineering, the engineering that we do, we use mathematics, but the higher mathematics isn't used very often, only when you do things like bridge construction, design and space rockets and that sort of stuff. But normal engineering, just the ordinary old mathematics is usually enough. If you can understand your multiplication, division and that sort of thing, that's usually enough for normal engineering.
So if you can't do third order differential equations, it shouldn't bar you from a career in engineering?
No, not at all. Unless you want to go into space science and that sort of stuff.
Or software.
It's not software, yeah. But an interesting point that young Roger made, doing software. But the software, it actually controls, it sets up control systems, and down the line there'll be a machine somewhere that this software has to control. And it'll involve a mechanism. And this is where we're lagging behind a bit. Mechanisms are sometimes not up to the software. And so, you know, the software can control things, but they've got to have machines to control.
Raymond, I think you should be a part-time lecturer or emeritus professor at UTS, and because everyone's nodding here. The young engineers are nodding when you're talking.
Thank you, Ian. Okay. Well, I find it easy to talk to somebody as switched on and enthusiastic as you. You're the most enthusiastic person I know, actually, about this sort of stuff.
And I know nothing. I'm useless. Absolutely useless. But anyway, it's just exciting. I mean, I think I like to see, I think the nice thing about being a kid in a school group or whatever university is to go somewhere and, oh, God, look at this, look at this. It's a two-way thing. It's good for them and it's good for you. Yeah. Raymond, look, it's lovely. I'm glad we we put you all in contact. They're lovely kids and it's all because Bridget decided to ring to say that engineers without borders were on the road. But thanks, Raymond. I'll see you soon and we'll talk about nuclear. Not this morning, but we'll talk about nuclear. Okay?
Thanks, Ian. We'll do some more work on that. Lovely to talk to you, Ian.
Okay, good on you, mate. Thank you. And thank you all for coming in and good luck. You're just over the road here, so always pop over. And Bridget, keep talking. Next time, where's your next trip, Toby? Do you got another thing to do when you're going out with the engineers?
I think our next winter engineering will be organised probably next year. However, we always do little youth outreach days throughout the semester at low socioeconomic areas and schools. So that will definitely be coming within our next uni semester.
Good on you. Great to talk to you. Thanks for coming in. Thanks, Bridget, again.
Thanks for having us, Becca.
Yeah, and good luck with your careers. Go up and see Raymond anytime. It's amazing up there, isn't it? I mean, he's got all this stuff laying around. He's working with a big block of steel at the moment. Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
That's
Thank
a pleasure. You, Good on you. Thank you. Oh, Nick Kirshner. Good morning, Nick.
Good morning, Maka. How are you?
Skier, world-famous skier, Nick Kirshner. Are you in Numbla Vale this morning, Nick?
Yes, I am. I'm at home this morning. It's a beautiful, glorious day once again after a big frost.
Yeah, what would it be in Numbla Vale this morning, mate? Which, ladies and gentlemen, is around Dalgetty way, sort of around there, yep.
Yeah, just the south of Dalgetty. Yeah, it's -4 or -5 this morning. The coldest we saw this week down by the creek is -11. So it was fairly chilly there earlier in the week.
And the wonderful horse trough, was that frozen over?
It's frozen as we speak.
You'd probably walk on it, yeah.
Well, I'm just about to take a bit of water out of it, and the bucket is sitting on top of it.
How about that?
It's not going anywhere. Yeah, that's right.
So you say minus, but I think you told me once that the ideal temperature for snow is a bit between 2 and minus 2. Is that right?
Correct. Absolutely spot on. So it's really been too cold to snow, and there's no moisture about, so it won't snow.
Yeah.
But the good news is they've had a bit of natural snow up the mountains, but with the real cold temperatures, all the resorts have been able to make a fair bit of snow, so they're all ready to go for the school holidays.
Yeah, there seemed to be a bit of snow. And look, I think it goes in cycles. And I mentioned earlier this morning that I remember, look, I don't know when it was, it might have been in the late 90s or the mid-90s, that there was really heavy snowfall. So I remember farmers were ringing us, telling us about the carnage amongst sheep and lambs because there were really heavy drifts of snow, especially in Victoria, piled up against fences, 2 and 3 and 4 foot deep.
Yep, no, that's right. Yeah, I think that was early 90s from memory. Mm. Maybe might have even been late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah, nothing like that at the moment, but you never know, do you, with the weather? It's unpredictable and has no memory.
Exactly right. That's absolutely spot on.
Now,
that's it.
Ladies and gentlemen, Nick Kirshner's a wonderful skier, an Olympic skier, are you still skiing? Because I remember you said your knees weren't great. Are you still skiing, Nick?
Yeah, look, a little bit. Had a few days, a couple of days last year, and I'm bound to get up there this year. Maddie will be up there for a few weeks very shortly. She's taking a week off from work at home and in our business, and she's going to work up there at Threadbow at the ski school for a month. So I'm bound to get up there when she goes up there.
Oh, that'd be nice. Remember a couple of years ago we were trying to get down to the snow to do a program, and then somebody said, "Oh no, you can't do your equipment will freeze out there." But you never know. But I'd love to do that. I'd still love to do that. There's something magical about snow. You're probably used to it because you live in the Alps and the high country. But for somebody who doesn't, when you see snow drifts and things like that, it transforms everything looking beautiful. The only good thing is probably some of those reindeers might freeze to death that are down there.
I don't think there's any much chance of that happening. I think they're all right. They'll get by just fine, all the deer.
Yeah.
But no, you're absolutely right. Look, I think a snow-covered landscape is absolutely magical, and snow falls and overnight, and it's absolutely beautiful.
Nick, it's great to talk to you, mate. I hope to see you in the next week or three. Okay.
Lovely. Looking forward to it. Yep. All the best, Macca. Lovely to chat.
Good on you, mate.
All the best.
Hey, g'day, Macca. This is John from Toowoomba. How are you today?
Thanks. Good, thanks, John.
Mate, you remember me from the banks in the bush, and I talked to you in Toowoomba once. I'm ringing about rural doctors going to the bush.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard a number of people over the time ring in about that, and I reckon that's a huge issue that we've got. At the present time, we're funding at QUT. They're going to put another medical school in, and it's harder now. We're graduating three times the number of doctors than when I graduated, which is 40-odd years ago. But it's harder now to get a doctor to the bush than it was 40 years ago. We're doing something completely wrong here.
Yeah, it seems to be. John, were you in Miles?
Yeah, it's me. Yeah.
Oh, that's you. I get it. Yeah, John. And the line in that little song, which on our promo, there's John up in Miles, who bank has made piles, watched them pack up and off with his dogo. But anyway, look, yeah, people have been talking about that forever. And then there was a system, I think, at Newcastle Uni, where they said, well, look, we'll get rural kids who know what it's like to live in the country and get them back. But there's so many people too. And, you'll find some country towns, big country towns, have only got one doctor, and other country towns have got none. So I don't know what the solution. I mean, I'm not a medical person, John. You're a doctor, so I don't know what the solution is, but...
Well, no one listens to me, mate. They just call me an old fart to get back in the box. But I do have a solution, and I think we should recruit in the bush, and we should take people on for their second career. So it could be a mechanic who was pretty bright at school, or I did work with one guy who'd been a forestry worker. He was a brilliant bush doctor.
Mm.
But, if we went out there, recognised their prior learning, and then put them through medical school, I reckon they're the people who'll go back to the bush, the ones that already have lived it, have kids there, all that sort of thing.
And John, I reckon a lot of kids who didn't make the cutoff It's like at cricket or anything you do in life, you know. It's you know, sometimes I didn't make the cutoff and I think, well, I'd be just as good as those people. And if you want to do something, you know, like I ended up wanting to do this, you'll be reasonably good at it. You know what I mean? And so I think a lot of doctor type kids who wanted to be doctors never make the cutoff. So maybe, but I don't know how you do any of that. I don't know how you make all that work, John, but that's what I think. I think there's lots of people who could be good at looking after people, and that's basically what it is, isn't it? It's husbanding and, you know, it's those sort of things. Yeah. So I don't know how you advance that, mate, but that's
One of the things has to be, can you live in the bush? Can you exist? You know, if they come to an interview with their partner and the partner won't go to the bush, we just put a line through them. Don't even think about it.
Yeah.
You know, we've got to be very practical about what we're doing. But I don't think it'd cost money. I reckon we'd save money because we'd take all the money from all the fail schemes that are going now.
John. Exactly. It's bloody god and depressing, Holden. Do you ever read The Catcher in the Rye, the book? Holden Caulfield, and he used to go around and say, it's goddamn depressing. That was one of his saying, and he also talked about phonies. One was a phony and that was a phony, and and he got in a fight with one of his college kids and he said, I was bleeding like a bastard. But anyway, it's a great book. But John, pause for thought. There should be.
I reckon we could do a forum with your program, and you can bring the academics along because we're being run by city-based academics telling us how to recruit for the bush. That's half our problem. But if you brought some old rural doctors and rural nurses along, I think we could make some ground. But it's painful to throw out all the stuff they've done, but it's been unsuccessful.
John, we'll follow it up. Nice to talk to you this morning.
Just one thing before you go.
Quick.
My son and I, nothing we'd like better than to put on Macca, 10 years over, The Crocodile Man and all that on the radio. And he's 21 now, but that's our favourite album.
Oh, good on you. All right, mate, good on you. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay, mate, cheers.
Monique is in Kiama, I believe. Good morning, Monique.
Good morning, Macca.
How's it going?
Going well. In about an hour, when I'm running a half marathon, I'm going to have my ABC app on and keep listening to you. So I'm going to need some motivation along the coast as we run from Kiama to Gerringong and back.
How far is that?
21K.
Wow, gee, that's half a marathon, isn't it?
It is half a marathon.
That's what it is.
It's the coastal classic.
And do you do this sort of thing all the time, Monique?
No, I'm pretty rubbish at running, but it's good to eat all of our yummy pastries and bread in Australia. It's the only reason I do it.
Really? Well, I don't know. I suppose it's worthwhile. Are they all free, are they?
No, but all these little cafes we have dotted across Australia have the best pastries. We lived in the States for 20 years and the bread is rubbish and the croissants are floppy and small, and Australia has the best pastries. They're like straight out of France.
You're a girl after my own heart, Monique. I feel exactly the same. I've got a French little shop I can go to from time to time, and it's got lovely bread and croissants and cakes, and that's what I live for, really, Monique. And I'm living to go. I've never been to Paris or to France. Apparently the coffee's crook over there, but the bread is. We've had calls from Paris and France from time to time. And they said, "Look, oh, it's over here, and people are so finicky. They have their own bakery, and they might travel 20 or 30 k's to go to their own bakery to get their particular bread and croissants in the morning."
Yeah.
I know how you feel. Is there anything good between Gerringong and Kiama?
Well, it's a trail run, so it's along the coast. It's like you're on the top of the rocks and the water's below, so you better not, I guess I better watch where I'm running, not fall off. But it's just a beautiful little coastal run. There's not much between it. Hopefully some water stations.
And you've done these before, Monique?
I did the Sydney Marathon a couple of years ago and swore I would never do a marathon again. I like the halves better. They're just, it's easier to train for and a nicer distance, and you're not dead for 6 months after.
Yes, I think if I did a marathon, I'd walk it, actually, and yeah. I'd probably take lots of breaks. I can't see but lots of people do them, but then lots of people don't do them.
Yeah, I just think of the pastries.
Well, fair enough too, Monique. And what's it like there this morning?
Well, it's beautiful. And what made me call was the lady earlier who spoke about the moon in the deck chair reclined back. I'm seeing the moon now out my left-hand window, with Venus just hanging up there with the moon, and it's beautiful. The skies are clear. The mist is out, settling across the horizon in between the hills, and set for a good day. So if it just can warm up a little bit, there'll be perfect conditions for a nice run while we listen to you.
Yeah, good on you, good on you. Nice to touch base, Monique, too. I've got lots of emails about the same thing. Macca, did you see Venus this morning sitting up next to the moon, says Alan the Butcher. And Macca, there's a wispy fog over the Bowman River, cool and crisp and shining above Venus, and it's shining right next to the moon this morning. Looks amazing. There you go. That's that's what people are looking at this morning, Monique. Lovely to talk to you, Monique.
Thanks, Macca. Have a good day.
Good on you. Good good luck.
Thank you. I'll listen to you later.
All right. Bye.
Good morning, Macca. It's Audrey from Bairnsdale.
Hi, Audrey.
I just wanted to report, which I do when we have rain here, but we've had no rain for the week, the moon is sitting in a deck chair leaning back, and it's very close to Venus in the northeastern sky. It's a clear sky here, and it's simply beautiful to look outside. But the ground is crunchy, and checking the rain gauge, I had to break the frost.
They used to call that, there was a book written called Poor Man's Orange, which describes the moon too, doesn't it? Like that half slice of orange, you know what I mean?
Exactly, yes. As a little girl, I lived in war-torn London, and I can remember very vividly being given an eighth of an orange to eat, and I took half an hour to eat that eighth. It was so beautiful, and I went back into the house with this little bit of skin that was like material flying in the breeze. Is there any more, Mummy? And Mum said, no, darling.
Mm. Audrey, I think they're nice memories, if you know what I mean.
They're the better ones.
Yes, I say the better ones. Yes. That's a lovely description of the moon. I saw it this morning driving in.
Good.
And I thought of is it Ruth Park's book, Poor Man Orange, Poor Man's Orange?
I think you'll find it is.
And there's a picture of that moon that you're seeing now on the front cover. I've got a hard copy somewhere.
Nice to be leaning back in a deck chair.
Anyway, good on you, Audrey. Great to talk to you.
You too.
See ya. Bye. Graham's in Kempsey. Morning, Graham.
G'day, Macca. How are you?
Oh, mate, considering the studio's had a few issues, I'm doing real well, really, actually, Graham.
Well, that's good to hear. I just want to tell you about a excursion I took my Year 11 Ag and Primary Industry students on a couple of weeks ago out to Weewar. Yeah, so we 12 students, we took them for a week out of school after a long weekend, and we went to visit a heap of different farming operations out in the northwest of the state, which was absolutely fantastic.
And when you say you're agriculture and primary industry students, is this a school? What school is this at?
It's at St. Paul's College in Kempsey.
All right, yep.
Yeah, so we just decided to take our students out to immerse them in agriculture and meet some farmers and look at a whole heap of different production systems out there. So,
and how was that, Graham?
It was terrific. Always amazed at just how open our farming community is, just ringing up people and asking them, can we bring a group of coastal kids through your feedlot or through, your cotton breeding centre or through your broadacre farm? And, people just, yeah, sure, bring them out. What time? When do you want to come? So we had a great time.
It's the best thing, isn't it? I mean, especially when you're young and you're going to do things that you haven't done before, tour of a factory, tour of a farm, tour of anything. Yep. It's just a great experience to get out and to meet other people. They're happy to meet you and you're happy to meet them usually. And so it's a great sort of interchange.
We looked at a whole heap of different technologies from, you know, we watched robotic tractors going up and down a field on their own, you know, doing a 4.5 kilometre run spraying. We went swimming each night in the Burren Junction bore, which was a great way to explain the artesian system to the students. And, went through the cotton research station there at Narrabri. Yeah, went to a Wagyu breeding farm, a feedlot near Tamworth. Just unreal.
Well, it'd be good swimming in the bores in the weather, because I bet it was cold out in Narrabri.
Yeah. So each night go out and have dinner and then go out and have a swim in the bore. And for an hour or so, that's just an eye-opener for the kids. And then take them home. Hopefully they're tired and want to go to bed.
And how are things in Kempsey, mate?
Things in Kempsey we've had a pretty rough trot, and just things are getting a little bit back to normal. Still a lot of people, mate, in dire straits. A lot of people have lost cattle and crops, and businesses in town have been flooded, and it's really tough. Just need some help, and if people are going through Kempsey, call in and spend some money in the town and just have a look about.
We're going to try and come up to Kempsey in the next week or two or week or three. Organise something and come up and say good day and talk to people, maybe play a song or two. I don't know. We're trying to work it out at the moment, Graham, but that's what we're going to do.
Yeah, people all along this mid-north coast, mate, Taree especially, Kempsey, just need help. And, I guess people coming to town and spending money and getting things back to normal and doing that sort of thing can help enormously.
Yeah, and that's the downside, I suppose, of being bypassed by, you know, highways, which bypass towns and in lots of ways. In times like this especially, you need the people to get off the road and come and say good day, don't you?
Yep, come and buy a pie, coffee, buy a T-shirt, do something, roll a carpet, tin of paint.
Exactly. Graham, good on you, mate. I'll call in and see you when we come up there. We'll enroll you and you can come along and help us, okay? And some of your kids at St. Paul's, okay?
I'm probably going to be away on a holiday, but I can organise some kids to come and have a yarn.
I'll make sure. When are you going away?
I'm leaving. We're going overseas, my wife and I, next week. For 3 weeks. Yeah.
Well, I'll make sure we come after you. You're back, mate.
That'd be awesome.
You're not getting out of it that cheap. Okay.
Yeah. So my mate Luke Kenneth, who's a Northwest boy, he put me up to ringing you. He said, "You've got to get on and ring Macca and tell him what you're doing with these kids." Anyway, there you go. G'day, Luke. How you going?
Good on you, Luke. Good on you, Luke. And thanks, Graham. Good on you, mate.
No worries, Macca. See you.
See you, mate. Bye.
Good morning, Ian. It's Ron from Toowoomba, mate.
Hi, Ron.
Ian, you just had a bloke on there about agriculture, mate. I'm a retired horticulturist, so that goes very close to what this chap was talking about. Mm. I'm 81 now. I've been retired for 23 years, and I was in charge of one of the gardens up here in Toowoomba, a private hospital. And when I started there in 82, we were using chemicals. Then I decided, well, look, this is no place for chemicals in a hospital. So I decided to do away with it and practicing IPM. I don't know if you know what IPM is, Macca.
You're going to tell us.
Integrated pest management, biocontrol, right?
Yep.
So what you do, you bring in the plants that are going to bring in your beneficials, and the beneficials will start knocking off the bad guys, mate. So it's a matter of bringing a lot of annuals and perennials that have get a lot of flowers in and brings in all your ladybirds and your hoverflies and so forth, et cetera. And then you're creating the natural balance instead of having chemicals in there to do the job, mate. I've been advocating this for years for people to put these into their gardens. I know some people are in flats and what have you, but if they have balconies, they can, you know, put some plants up in polystyrene boxes and this type of stuff to bring in natural predators into their gardens, you know?
It's a great idea. I don't know if you heard well, some time ago, but I replayed a little grab of a bloke called John Womersley, who's big on this, and he was talking about the use of pesticides and the fact that we don't see insects and stuff. The insects are just copping it, and he says you can tell by when you he was driving from, I think, from Adelaide to Port Pirie, but he said wherever you drive, or he said if you go out the back and you turn your light on out the back, once upon a time there were swarms of moths and beetles and stuff, and doesn't seem to happen nearly as much now. I don't know what the real situation is. These are anecdotal things. I don't know what the real situation is, but if we don't have insects and bits and pieces, we don't have anything. Ronnie, do we?
Exactly, Ian. Exactly, mate. And I must apologise. I used to listen to it every Sunday morning, but unfortunately my wife went into a nursing home and things got twisted around in the household here for a while, mate. But I decided to put the radio on this morning on, hello, Mac is back on again.
No, so, he's never been off. You've been off, Ron. So welcome.
Exactly. That's what one of your colleagues said to me, mate, when I phoned up. So, but look, also we're in the, for 25 years, the Carnival of Flowers, mate. We used to enter our gardens. And with the carnival coming up in September again, so nice time to just promote the carnival for our lovely city of Toowoomba, mate.
We've been to a couple of the Toowoomba Carnival Flowers and had a lovely time, once in Queen's Park and then last time, which was about 5 years ago, we were somewhere there, and lovely, beautiful gardens. We had a lovely time. We should come back.
Yeah, well, mate, you'd know Noni Hazlehurst, wouldn't you, the actress?
Well, not well, but I know of her, yes.
Mate, we had her in the garden here, I think it was in 2002, I think it was. I think they particularly Better Homes and Gardens wanted a nice garden to promote. And now I had a friend within the council and they said, Ron, would you like to promote your garden? I said, oh, that'd be nice. So anyhow, a team turned up on the day and they had all these cameras set up. Next moment, a car turned up and this short lady got out and I said, bloody hell, that's Noni Hazlehurst. So we had Noni Hazlehurst in our garden here, mate, and walking around the gardens. And anyhow, I couldn't help myself. Noni and I, before the camera started, walking down the street, and I said to Noni, hey, Noni, she said, yes, Ron. I said, mate, there's a bear in there. And going back to play school when Noni was in play school. And,
exactly. All right. Well, look, well, maybe we will come, if we can come to Toowoomba. We've been a couple of times to Toowoomba, but people come from all over the place, from Crow's Nest and all out of town, so it's probably a good idea, Ronnie. But welcome back, Ron. Nice to talk to you, mate. Stay tuned.
Yeah, thanks very much, Ian. I appreciate it, mate.
It's a pleasure. Good on you.
God bless, mate.
This is the All Over News. This is the All Over News, and this week I thought we'd all like to hear how the next generation of young Australians are adapting to new technology like AI. I went to the Science and Engineering Challenge the other day. It's a nationwide competition for young Australians years 9 to 10 in schools all over Australia. I went to the central coast of New South Wales where this competition began 25 years ago, under the auspices of Newcastle University. Volunteers are an integral part of making all this work. Meet Barry Henwood. I'm at St Edward's College in Gosford.
East Gosford.
I'm talking to Barry Henwood. Barry, tell me about yourself first. Where are you from?
Well, I live locally. I got involved with this 20 years ago, or 25 years ago, so it's been running for 25 years.
And what's been running? What is it?
It's the Science and Engineering Challenge. So it's an event with all of these little stimulating challenges for the kids. They're all in year 10, and we're trying to convince them they should select maths and physics in years 11 and 12.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, because 25 years ago, the University of Newcastle realised there's falling enrolments in maths and physics. Not enough engineers. So they invented it. My Rotary Club did the first one. And 25 years later, there's nearly 30,000 kids doing it every year, every state, every territory.
And is it improving the number of kids who are doing maths and STEM?
It is. There's a proven record for it. Obviously, the university keeps statistics. But right now, 49% of the kids doing physics in Newcastle Uni did this event, and it motivated them. Isn't 49%.
That's great, because we do need engineers.
And most of my volunteers in here, they're Rotarians, but most of the people running events are ex-engineers. So they're retired people, and out they come to stimulate the same thing, to stimulate their own interest in engineering.
Is that your background?
Not exactly, no. I actually started out doing maths, and so I did a maths degree in Adelaide in the 1960s, and then I took up a different profession.
It always seems to me that maths is something you just can do. It's like running fast. You can run fast or you can't run fast, and maths seems to be, it's like, you know, English or whatever. You're just good at something, but maybe not maths.
I wasn't any good at anything else, but maths I was pretty good at, so it was an easy thing for me to progress through uni with. And
now, do you always need maths for engineering? I mean, I suppose you do, but then again, you need some sort of thing in your brain where you can just look at something and say, ah, we could do that, or...
I'm not actually an engineer, so after I finished my degree, I became an airline pilot, but my son's an engineer, and he tells me you can't do engineering if you haven't done maths, and preferably advanced maths. If you can't get your head around the formulae and how it works, you can't become an engineer. So it's important for these kids at years 10 and 11 that they select maths. They don't have to be geniuses, but they've got to have a big maths background.
So where are these kids from now that are here doing this?
All over the Central Coast. So we draw from the bottom of the Central Coast to the top. So Gorrick and High at the top and your minor at the bottom. 16 high schools are competing, and it's a competition, so the kids look like they're competing, but they also have fun.
And this happens around Australia, all over the place?
It does now. It started right here in Gosford, then all throughout the Hunter, then the Northern Rivers, then all of New South Wales, now right around Australia. Every state, every territory is running this event.
Isn't that wonderful? That's a great thing. You know, from little things, big things grow.
Yeah, the University of Newcastle have got permanent staff to run it now because the logistics are enormous. As you'll see when you have a look inside, the equipment they've got to transport around is huge. So to get it up to the Northern Territory is a real exercise.
Barry, you better take me around and show me these kids and I'll talk to some of them, okay?
I'm going to warn you before we go in, the very first event you see will be Electro City, and the kids will be there, and it's exactly what we do with our national grid. They've got to connect up power stations to facilities, hospitals, suburbs and factories. And they've got to do it in the cheapest possible way. The guy I've got running, it is a retired electrical engineer, and he was the head of Energy Australia, so chief electrical engineer. So he tells me this is the real world. What they're doing is the real thing. It's a good simile.
And tell me about the fish trap thing.
Well, I'm running the fish trap, so right now it's just out of control. So it's based on the Aboriginal fish trap. So we have a picture of the fish traps out at Brewarrina. And we simulate marbles for fish. So we got big marbles. They are the breeding stock, and you never want to catch them. If you catch one, it's a penalty. We've got little fish. They're too small to eat, so you should be throwing them back. If you catch one, that's a penalty. And we've got medium-sized ones. And you want to catch the exact right number. There's 24 of them. And in each exercise, you want to catch 12. You catch too many, there's not enough left for tomorrow. Don't catch enough, you get hungry tonight. So we roll them down a board, and they've got to design these little three-dimensional obstacles that will catch the fish.
And I guess for kids, even if they don't continue a career in physics or in engineering or whatever, it's good experience anyway.
It is, yeah. Well, it's all kinds of... It doesn't have to be just engineering. It's all kinds of things. Well, the fish trap's a good example. So actually one of the blokes in my event here used to be the head of agriculture in New South Wales, so he knows about fish traps, and it's a good career. We've got kids in there that are building and flying little aeroplanes, so Boeing sponsor that part of it. We've got kids building eco habitats that collect water, and you can land a helicopter on the roof, so they've got to design something that stands up in a wind tunnel. We've got all kinds of events, and there's 8 different events, all different disciplines. I remember years ago we had an event that the kids had to design an undercarriage for a wagon that you towed over a bumpy course. I remember one particular group of boys just didn't want to do it, didn't want to participate, until I said to them, imagine you were building bogey wheels underneath a Holden ute. It just turned them right around. All of a sudden they became wildly enthusiastic. It was great.
Good on you, Barry. Let's go and talk to them.
Let's have a look, eh?
Hello. Hi. Can I talk to you?
Sure.
Your name is?
Ayla.
Ayla N.
Yuji.
And?
Kai.
And where are you from?
At Central Grove Grammar School.
What was your project?
We're doing the electricity, and you have to power a city using different electrical cables, and there's like certain cost criteria and stuff.
It's a competition too, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's like the school who has the most points is like the winner. And you can like progress through the levels and go on to compete nationally and stuff.
Yeah, and what's your name?
Kai, and we somehow managed to make it to level 10, which is the finish level somehow.
I think we work together pretty well. We're pretty good at teamwork, I think. So we just all kind of contributed what we could.
Well, teamwork's what it's all about, isn't it? Whether you're playing sport or whatever you're doing. What do you think you're going to do when you leave school?
I want to do something medical. I'm not completely sure yet, but something sciencey medically.
All right, well, good luck. How do you think you'll go?
Hoping we go pretty well.
Good luck, girls. Lovely to meet you. Good
on you. You too.
All sorts of projects here. Your particular project, what's your name?
Kobe.
Kobe and...
Anthony.
And...
Hamish.
Rudy.
And what were you doing?
Oh, we were designing the plane to make it do three separate challenges. It was distance, landing, and target practice.
And this is gliding?
Gliding, yes.
And how did you go, you reckon?
Oh, we went pretty all right, I think. Yeah, we got pretty good in all of them. We didn't get lost. That's the main good thing.
How's
yeah.
that go? What are you going to do when you leave school, you reckon?
I'm definitely not going to be designing planes. Not at all.
What about you?
This is kind of funny because designing planes is kind of the thing I want to do when I leave school. I'm thinking of becoming an aeronautical engineer.
Good luck. What school do you go to?
St. Philip's Christian College, Gosford.
This is the All Over News, and that's just some of the students from St. Philip's Christian College in Gosford. And as Barry Henwood pointed out earlier, this whole thing is being overseen by volunteers, many of whom are retired engineers, mathematicians and teachers, like Jim Lawson. Jim, you're an electrical engineer of background.
Correct, that's right.
And you volunteered here?
Many, many times. I think it's a great beginning for children of this age to learn some of the basic facts that go behind science and technology. In this particular case we're looking at now is we're looking at how they can power up a city with a minimum amount of cabling, bearing in mind cost of cabling, availability of power stations, and basic things like that. And they're getting a feel for it in a competitive way.
And that's a really big thing now because we're apparently restructuring all our cables and wires and putting in whole lots of new ones. And as you say, it's very expensive.
It is. And one has to look at the basics of why do you need cabling? Yes, it's a necessity. B, what size cabling? Length of time that cabling's likely to be used before it becomes to capacity. So these sorts of little tests that children are doing just gives them some basic into what is the extremities that they can take equipment to.
Jim, we're in 2025 and these young kids are, you know, about 15, 16. Tell me about you. You were doing this, but you didn't have anything like this, a project like this, did you, when you started school and decided or not to be an electrical engineer? Or?
It wasn't until we got to the likes of high school, which we learnt some of the basics, and then to university, where we got involved with the real thing. So in these children's case, early in their high school, it's a lot of brand new experiences.
From my recollection, you've got to try and make a subject, whatever it is, especially maths for some kids, you've got to try and make it interesting in some way, haven't you? And see the possibilities, because we just sat at the desk and, oh God, more equations. You've got to make it interesting, haven't you?
And that's what this is all about. And it's not only that, this one educates them into teamwork, which is another side of the whole thing. When you look at the groups of students, you can pick out the ones that are a team, ones that have supervisory sort of potential, others that are here just to twiddle the thumbs and not really interested. And that's life. You've got to get that cross-section of people.
And you've volunteered on this for years, have you?
Oh, this is probably about my sixth or seventh year. I love it. It helped to impart a bit of knowledge to the students in a nice way without telling them what to do. Give them some background. And I always do an analogy. It's like a long hose. If you start off with a thick hose and eventually at the end it just whittles out at the end, if you've had a stronger hose the whole way through, the water will still be pouring out the end. Same with cables.
Good on you, Jim. Great to talk to you.
Likewise.
Your name is?
Xander Brown.
And what was your project, Xander?
Electrical grids. We've got to optimise value and connect all the dots, really. Make sure everything works.
That's what life's about, isn't it? Connecting the dots. What's your name?
Tom Eslick.
And how did you go, Tom?
I think we went all right. Yeah, we got through most of it.
Your name?
Luke Kirkland. When we started, it was just like everything was unlocked except the like big cable, and then we just like connected everything and it worked, and it just kept on getting harder. And we had the like worst cables in one round, and we just had to try to do everything we could to just like connect as much as we could.
When you get stuck, what do you do?
We just have to figure it out by ourselves. Like, we can't...
I hate that. And how did that go?
It went all right. It was a bit tricky doing it by ourselves, but we ended up doing it in the end. We got pretty far, better than most of the other groups.
Well, that's great. What's your name?
Ronan.
And what school do you go to?
Tumbiyamwi Campus.
Can I ask the four of you, what do you think you're going to do when you leave school? Is it going to be something to do with STEM, or are you going to be an artist, or what?
I want to be a marine engineer.
What about you?
Probably an electrical engineer.
Mm-hmm.
Commercial pilot.
Right.
I want to work in cybersecurity.
Well, good luck. Maybe we'll see you in the final or something like that.
Yeah. Good on you.
Bye. Yeah, have a good one.
G'day, Macca. It's Greg Mortimer here. And I'm over the Flinders Ranges at the moment. And I've got Lake Frome ahead. Beautiful, beautiful morning. And yesterday we were on the ground at the Cooper. On the Cooper's River, where the floodwater front is,
yeah,
and it's only about 6 kilometres up from the Birdsville track. So sometime this week, the Birdsville track's going to get flooded, and extraordinary spectacle.
Well, it is, ladies and gentlemen. This is Greg Mortimer, the conqueror, one of the conquerors of Everest. I always think about it. What we talked about, and you said they're queuing up to climb Everest, but. Greg, you're in a plane and you're over the Cooper Creek or Lake Eyre or Frome or...
Yeah, right now I'm over the Flinders,
yeah.
And I can see Lake Frome ahead, that white expanse of salt, and all the beautiful geology of the Flinders Ranges under us now. Absolutely exquisite. A beautiful clear morning, quite a strong wind from the north. I guess that's a precursor to the big storms coming this week. Nothing better.
No, people talk about this will be bigger than 74. I'm not sure. Some have said it will be, but those in the know say it probably won't be quite as big as 70. 74 was apparently a huge filling of Lake Eyre, but a lot of water out there, Greg.
Yeah, we were getting mixed messages from people on the ground, people in the know. Some saying it's going to be bigger than 74 and some saying not, but... Good Lord, there's a lot of water coming down. We could stand on the front of it, and the front was about 5 kilometres wide, moving at a couple of kilometres an hour. And we just had to keep moving back as it came down the wide expanse of one of those big lakes just upstream from the Birdsville track.
It's a wonder they don't need air traffic controllers out there, because everybody seems to be going up there to have a look at this, because... As Dick Smith said to me weeks and weeks ago, it's a once-in-a-lifetime thing to see it, and the natural world just does it for me, and I know it does it for you too, Greg.
It's very hard to comprehend the volume of water, and yes, there's a lot of planes in the air having a look at it, because it is a once-in-a-lifetime jobby, and Lake Eyre is, it's the inland sea that they're all looking for, and there it is right now.
Yeah, and that's funny, isn't it? And to think that Donald Campbell was attempting the world land speed record on this lovely big salt lake with a big thick crust on it, but it doesn't seem to have been dry, really, certainly suitable for car racing since that time. I mean, it seems to have been wet every other... I mean, I'm sitting here, I know there was a big filling in about 1989 or 91. There's been some big falls since then, so maybe it's just circular or cyclical, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, it's had a lot of water on it over the last decade, really, hasn't it?
Yeah.
And it's extraordinary, Macca, and it seems so soft at the moment. You know, that's hard country there around Katitana Lake Eyre, and it looks. Really like a resort at the moment. Beautiful expanse of blue water, calm, warm, gorgeous.
Yeah, and when you read, I've read those books, The Rumbling Silence of Lake Eyre, and also Where the Seasons Come and Go. They're wonderful books about the fillings of Lake Eyre at the time, and and you see big cliffs there, you know, like about 10 metres high in some places, and waves when a big storm gets up. Lake Eyre's a dangerous place if you're on Lake Eyre when the storm comes up and you're out in the middle.
Yes, I imagine, and yeah, not a place to be. I mean, the locals talk about 55 degree heat in the summer, so no, not for man or beast, I don't think, but too hot for me.
Well, I wish I was with you, Greg, out there. What flight? What sort of height are you flying at?
We're at 5,500 feet now. I was just with some friends doing some filming with Greg Granger over the last few days, and it was what a spectacle!
Yeah, a lady called earlier this morning, and I asked her if she saw many birds, because you hear that story as soon as the lake starts to fill. The pelicans seem to know about it and they turn up. I don't know, is there lots of bird life that you can see?
We saw pelican rafts on the Warburton, but not so much around Lake Eyre at the moment. They're on their way, I imagine. Yeah.
He's gone. Gone, dropped out. That's Greg Mortimer, as I said.
Oops, I lost.
Yeah, you're right there. I've got you back.
Okay, gotcha.
Okay, what were you saying?
Did you hear me about the pelicans? Not in large numbers yet. We saw some on the Warburton, but they're on their way.
All right, Greg, great to talk to you, mate. I'll hope we bump into you sooner or later, okay?
Yeah, you too, Mac, and take care.
See you, mate. Bye.
G'day, my name is Will. I'm sailing up the Queensland coast with my family on our yacht.
Well, half your luck, Will. What's it like? Whereabouts are you?
Right now, I'm in between Keswick Island and St. Bees Island.
Our geography's sadly lacking. Whereabouts is that in terms of, say, the big towns and cities along the coast of Queensland? Whereabouts, roughly?
15 miles off the coast from Mackay.
Oh, I see. Well, Will, that's very... How long have you been doing that for, Will?
7 weeks, I think.
So do you just homeschooling or something, Will, do you?
Partially homeschooling.
And what's the other partial? What's the other part?
Having fun.
Having fun. Well, we should all be doing that, Will. Tell me about your boat.
Our boat is a 60-foot boat, and it's a monohull.
Uh-huh. So that's, I know that means it's not a catamaran. A monohull. Well, that sounds good. And so what's the plan? Where are you heading for and how long will that take? Or is there no plans?
We're aiming for early, but we're kind of just going to weave and weave and weave until the weather kind of suits up, matches.
Is it a bit rugged at the moment, the weather, is it?
Yes. It's going on and off, the rain.
Oh, I see. So what, you're hiding behind an island or something, are you? Waiting for the weather to clear, or what do you do?
Yeah, we are hiding behind Keswick Island. The beaches here are no good, but there's another beach just around the side on Keswick. We had a fire there yesterday, and it was quite a nice beach.
Lots of people would love to do. I'd love to do what you're doing. I'm not a great sailor, I don't believe. I haven't done much, so I may, but what do you see out there? Do you see lots of things that you never see otherwise? Do you see sailfish or whales or dolphins, or what do you see out there, Will?
When we were a week ago, when we were at this island called High Peak near the Percy Islands.
Oh, the Percy Islands. Yeah, we mentioned the Percy Islands this morning because a bloke who I used to talk last week, he said... he used to listen to us on the Percy Island. Anyway, go on.
And High Peak is near Percy, and when we arrived, the dolphins gave us a bit of a show. They all jumped out of the water. There was about 15 of them.
Well, they probably said, Will's here. Let's put on a show for him. And that's probably what happened.
Yeah.
Anyway, so you saw some dolphins, but I know when you... How far out do you... You're inside the reef, aren't you?
Yes.
Inside the reef, yeah. But apparently when you go out there, out in the big ocean, out there, you know, 50, 60, 70 k's out, it's like a wilderness out there, you know, and you don't know what you'd see. So you wouldn't see any whales yet, would you?
No, we haven't seen any whales yet. Mm. Bit too early and we're a bit too close to the coast.
Yeah. All right. Sorry? Wait. And what's the name?
We're kind of on the border from where the whales go and where the whales don't go.
All right. And what's the name of your little boat?
Margo.
All right. Well, Will, nice to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you too.
Thanks for the call. You do some of the steering on the boat, do you?
Yes, I haven't done much lately because we've been completely sailing. It's quite hard to steer when you're completely under sail.
Great to talk to you, Will. Thank you. And, happy sailing, okay?
Okay. Thank you, Mac.
It's a pleasure. See you later.
See you later.
Oh, hi, Macca. Good to talk to you. This is Neil from Newcastle. Looking forward to seeing you at Surf House 10 a.m. Wednesday.
Oh, good on you.
But today you've been talking about housing and communication, and it appears to me we just get bombarded with communication of statistics, whether it be the budget or unemployment or spending or crime or whatever. But on housing, just specifically, the government's saying there's 1.2 million dwellings to be made and to be built in the next or completed in the next 5 years. Now, I'm not saying it's not possible, but when we get thrown the statistics, you just should try and look behind them. So you get a calculator out, and 1.2 million, and Australia's a vast place, obviously, but 1.2 million houses is 4,615 houses or units or whatever completed every week for 5 years. Now, I know a block of units might be 250 units on its own, but where are these dwellings? 1.2 million is 923 dwellings, whether houses or units, per day, based on a 5-day week, or 657 houses per day based on a 7-day week. And if you fall behind, the one you fall behind is you've got to catch up. So I just don't know where these are, and it just, you know, does my head in just getting quoted statistics without sort of having any backup. You know, like when you look behind some things like the fast speed trail between Newcastle and Sydney, you'd be able to catch it if it was there, and that's great. Like, to have it would be terrific, but the high-speed rail, according to the head of the high-speed rail, is to cost $100 billion. And they're saying that a million users per year catch the train or use the train from Sydney to Newcastle. Now, that's 114 people every single hour of every single day for a whole year. Now, there's not 114 get off the train or onto the train every hour, 1 a.m. in the morning or whatever, in Newcastle. So I asked where the units were. And when you find out and you look behind the statistics, you find out, which is plausible, the users are Chatswood Central.
Mate, statistics are the last refuge. I mean, that's all they can do. Say, well, this is this and this is what we're going to do. But it doesn't go much beyond that, does it?
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. And that's what I'd like to know. Now, all things are possible. Like, you know, things are the things that we're doing now in medicine and engineering and space and, you know, AI, and it's incredible what's getting done now. You know, knee replacements are done by robots and all that sort of thing. It's amazing, but you'd want to know what's behind the statistics, just not quoted a number that the budget's gone up 0.01% or crime's gone down 0.01%. What does that mean?
Yeah, well, another statistic, my friend Simon Crane, who comes on here sometimes and talks about all sorts of things and manufacturing, he said, you know, manufacturing, we don't do much manufacturing because Australia's building a city the size of Adelaide every 2.5 years. But that doesn't mean that's not dwelling. That's not dwellings. That's just the city the size of.
That's great.
More statistics. As the bloke on the TV says, dust me head in, mate. Dust me head in.
Well, It does my head into, and they say there's lies, damn lies, and statistics.
Yes, well, exactly.
You know, but I just can't understand it. But anyway, looking forward to seeing you Surf House 10 a.m. Wednesday.
Good on you, mate. Thanks, Neil. Bye.
Bye.
Hi, Ian. How are you?
Good, thanks. Who's that?
Helen.
Yes, Helen, tell me a story. Yeah, tell me a story quick.
Well, I've rang and spoke to you before in reference to Xavier, my grandson, and he leaves this morning for South Africa to compete in surfing.
All right, what's his last name?
Huxtable.
Xavier Huxtable. And
that's
he's going. Every time I think of South African surfing, I think of white pointers because they've got...
I don't want to hear about that.
They've got more white pointers than South Australia, like at Cactus Beach and in Western Australia, haven't they?
No, South Australia Cactus.
Yeah, I know, but Western Australia has the great whites too. But so they're sort of an Indian Ocean, sort of Great Australian Bite. They're all around the place.
So how
old's Xavier now?
He's now 23.
But he
competed at Merriweather about 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
This is what got me when you've been talking about Merriweather.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. And then he had Sumatra, just come back from Sumatra. Now he's off to South Africa. Then he's off to California, then Portugal, then Korea, then Japan, and then Brazil.
Oh, dear, oh, dear.
All before November.
And all before he's 24 or whatever.
That's right.
And what's on in South Africa? Is it a world championship or just
It's what they call a qualifying series. It's the one below the big championship of the world.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah, and you have to compete in this to sort of work your way up. Yeah, yeah.
We just lost a great surfing man, Jack McCoy. He just passed away the other day. He'd probably know of Xavier, and he knew all the surfing people. But good luck to him. Tell him I don't know if it's Xavier. He's 23. He's probably not interested. He's more interested in surfboards and things. But maybe sometime he could ring us from somewhere along the way.
I could tell him that. No, look, he's a good kid. He came up and had a chat with the Lions Club of Torquay just recently.
Oh, well, tell him to give me a ring. Give us a ring
I will.
From South Africa.
Yeah. I've rung you from West Australia when he was competing over there and other places. Yeah.
All right, Helen.
Yep.
How's things in Torquay? Beautiful, I suppose.
Damn cold. 4 degrees when I went down for my walk this morning.
Good on you, Helen. Keep in touch. Thanks for telling us about Xavier Huxtable.
Yeah, thanks very much, Macca. Bye.
Good on you, boys.
G'day, Macca. This is Mark calling from Crooktown.
G'day, Mark. How are you going?
Oh, pretty good, mate. Yourself?
Yeah, good. What's happening?
Oh, look, first of all, listen to you for ages, first time I've ever called you. They got the Crooktown Festival for Captain Cook's landing here.
I tell you what, as soon as you said that, now people who are sitting around in Cairns and Townsville wondering what to do say, let's go to Crooktown, and they'll be pulling up stumps and heading to Crooktown. The Crooktown Festival, that sounds great, mate. What are you doing there? You live there, or what's the story?
No, I retired 2 months ago, and I drove from Rockhampton, picked my mate up from Townsville, and we just came up to have a look, and happy coincidence, the festival was on, and we just watched the fireworks last night. They had a street parade. The reenactment of Cook's Landing is going to be between 10:30 and 11:30, and they're happy, friendly people. Got a great pizza at the Lion's Den Hotel on the way in. It's just a bit of good news I thought I'd share.
Good on you, mate. That's what we like. I'd love to go to Crooktown. Haven't been to Crooktown, but I'd love to go there. But you'll have a great time there. It's a different part of Australia and a bit laid back and a bit, where you can just catch your breath. I think it'd be wonderful.
The minimum's not four. It was 23 last night. So.
Well, that's good. Good on you, mate.
Take it easy. Have a nice day.
Thanks, Mark.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.